Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome into Attacking Third, presented by CarMax, the way car buying should be. Darian Jenkins, Lisa Carlin, and Jenny Chu here for you today. How are you guys on this beautiful Monday morning after so much footy action?
I'm good. Excited to chat about it because you're right. There was a lot of different things that unfolded over this weekend. A lot of VAR calls, stoppage time, a lot of chaos in the weekend.
Yeah, on brand. Way too much stoppage time, in my opinion. Way too much time in the VAR checks. I can't wait to get into it.
Yeah, there was a lot of extra time on these matches. We do have those stats on there. We'll get into that later. But before we get talking about the Conte Cup final between Arsenal and Chelsea, there was a scary moment when Arsenal midfielder Frieden Manam collapsed during the second half and play stopped as she received treatment on the field. Arsenal later confirmed that Manam was conscious and in stable condition. All of us here at CBS wish her well. This morning, Vivian Miedema recently posted on social media saying there are things bigger than football and that the win was for Frida. Let's go ahead and dive into the match. Arsenal winning back to back. How are we feeling about this W? It was obviously a pretty even game, Darian, and then Arsenal gets the win.
Yeah, I mean, I think both teams defended for their lives. What an exciting game to watch. Myra Ramirez had a great goal earlier in the match. It was taken back from a handball on Cuthbert. But this could have gone either way. They both created so many chances. I thought, what an entertaining game. Tensions were high. You even saw the coaches get into it a little bit at the end of the match. But I think Arsenal deserved this. They were knocking at the door for a really long time, especially in the second half. And I think with Madam going down, it was extra motivation for them to get this win, because that's all that you have control over in that moment is being able to tell her, hey, we won this for you.
Yeah.
And I think this is a really special moment. Blackstenius' goal came so late in the game. You can see how much it means to this team, and they fully deserved it, in my opinion.
I agree. Arsenal was the better team on the day, ultimately. The chances that they created were a bit more well-rounded as a team, whereas I feel like Chelsea just tried to rely a little bit too much on individuals. They were missing the final pass when they got opportunities, and ultimately, they took a shot. I think they needed one more pass. Mm-hmm. And that would have been the difference for Chelsea throughout this game.
Lisa, I think that that's something that we should touch on, because when we talk about Lauren James, obviously, we celebrate her when she has these moments of brilliance that are individual, right?
Yeah.
But then, obviously, there was multiple opportunities in this match where she should have or could have passed off to her teammates and would have kind of increased the opportunity or the chance to go into the net. And she instead took it herself. I know that, you know, talking about it in the past, it doesn't make sense as a, you know, she should have passed the ball, because
yeah,
when she does,
could have, would have.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But there were definitely opportunities where Chelsea could have won the game in that way.
Hands down. And I think it was so easily spottable because of the way Arsenal was playing as well.
Yeah.
They were always looking for the open player, and it felt as if their final pass was the right decision every single time. They were testing Hannah Hampton in goal for Chelsea and forcing her to make really good saves, and Chelsea to defend as a unit, because they were always looking at that one extra position. Mm-hmm. And so it was so blatantly obvious when Chelsea wasn't doing that, because you were seeing it right happening at the other end of the field for Arsenal.
third consecutive loss in the final for Chelsea for the Blues, Emma Hayes' side. Obviously, Darian, you mentioned there a little bit of anger from Emma Hayes after the match, and there's some controversy there. But to have lost three times in the final, Lisa, what does this mean for this Chelsea side, although they are still alive in other competitions?
It feels like they're a little cursed at times, and they just can't complete that one final step. And this is a Chelsea side, of course, that's won Women's Super League title after title after title, and they have so much success, but the final piece doesn't come together. And when you're going for championships and looking to lift titles, you can't always rely on individual skill and individual player personalities. Lauren James, coming off a fully rested Champions League play last week, she was fresh and ready to go. And when you get to these big moments in really big games, yes, it's helpful when big players step up, but you need the collective group as a whole to be able to push it over the final edge.
What about Arsenal? I know that you were kind of giving us a breakdown there, Darian. It was lovely, but something about this Arsenal team, especially on the attacking end, obviously both sides being incredibly well defensively, Lisa, like you mentioned, but finding the way to win for Arsenal. What can you say about Jonas Eidevall's side?
I thought that they were fantastic. Lisa, I think you said it really well. I don't have much more to add, but they were more of a complete team. I thought they looked for the final pass. They were precise in their passes. They were very much had good chemistry in this game. I think they had a very clear game plan coming into it that they were going to break Chelsea down and play through the seams of their back line and get shots on target. Chelsea just wasn't able to do that. You're right. It was very individualistic based. They weren't playing the passes that I think they should have played, whether that's just on the day they weren't matching up, or you know what, Lauren James is like, I'm going to do it. I've scored goals like this before, which right. I totally get. She's a forward. Of course, you think that way. But it just wasn't coming together, and I think Arsenal was just better on the day. They had much more team play and got the win at the end.
I think the difference for Chelsea maybe could have helped with changes earlier in the match. That's what, at halftime, I was almost waiting for, to me, Arsenal had better chances, more clear-cut opportunities to score in the first 45 minutes. This isn't even before we get to the extra time at the end of this match. And I wanted to see changes then at that point from Emma Hayes' side just to bring on, I don't know, I think Aggie Beaver-Jones has done a really good job with this side.
She would have asked just more questions from Arsenal.
Exactly. And that would have forced changes into this Arsenal's defensive side, but we didn't see it. It was too little too late for Chelsea. Yeah.
Well, what does this mean to Arsenal, right? Because they won a trophy now, and they're probably not going to win the league. They don't have Champions League. They don't have the ability to win any other trophy. The fact that this season they do get a trophy here, is that a big win for them? Obviously, some hardware matters.
I think it matters to some extent because at the end of the day, you don't want to say, hey, we were losers across all the competitions we went into, but they wanted to win more. So it feels like a consolation to some extent, but this is a big deal for them to win this and get the win over Chelsea. But you know they wanted to be in Champions League. You know they want to be title contenders in the Super League. But it feels like things are finally coming together for Arsenal too at this point to get a big win over Chelsea in this manner.
Awesome. Let's go over to the other USL results that we have seen this weekend. A big one, Liverpool against Manchester City. That was on Saturday morning, and that was a 4-1 win for Manchester City. And I just have to say, Bunny Shaw's goal, sheesh. I mean, a touch of art, a touch of brilliance, Darian.
Yeah, it's a worldie. I think City was just on par this game. They looked so good. Everybody looked threatening. They were scoring in a variety of ways. Jess Park slicing and dicing, gliding through everybody. She looks like the ball is literally tied to her foot. Yeah. I don't know how she's so composed with all of the pressure coming her way. And here's the worldie that we were talking about with Shaw. My word, I don't know how you stop her. She can score from distance. She scores from her head. She scores up close. She's good 1v1.
She's two defenders on her on that header.
She's unstoppable. There's no way. I think we've seen teams try to stop her by fouling the crap out of her on set pieces or in the run of play, but she still is able to score. And she loves to score against Liverpool. She had a hat-trick last time they played. And Liverpool, I just don't think, have the same depth or chemistry yet that City has. They don't have as many threats going forward. You know, your defender and captain is scoring both of your goals from each game that they've lost 5-1 previously, 4-1 yesterday. Over the weekend. And so they're not doing enough to challenge City in a way that they can actually compete.
And Liverpool is better. They've taken strides to get better this year and have more complete performances. But Manchester City were favorites heading into this match, and they also proved it on the day. Sometimes we don't always see that, right? When teams fall apart or they have mismanaged moments. And of course, Bunny Shaw attracts so much attention from the opposition, from fans, from media. Mary Fowler had a really good match throughout this game. I think her ability to kind of read situations on the wing for Manchester City allows Bunny Shaw to get in such great positions because Fowler understands where the space is and how to utilize that for herself and her teammates, whether that's stretching wide or looking to get into the pocket behind, cutting inside. I was really impressed with Mary Fowler throughout this match.
Well, I'll say that I think a lot of players on City do that, and it frees up Shaw. But then when Shaw's on the ball, that frees it. Like, I don't know. There's no way to stop them. I don't know how you ease the threat of this entire front attacking line for City. And that would, you know, they still had subs coming in that you're like, oh my God, I don't know what you do.
Yeah, it's constant waves of pressure. Yeah.
We've seen that from both teams that are currently tied for first in Chelsea and Manchester City, sharing the wealth in terms of goals and that attacking threat. Liverpool have now fallen to fifth place in the WSL. Let's go ahead and talk about the other match as well. Manchester United against Everton. Everton gets the goal first, and Everton gets the first goal. And then Manchester United comes into the second half and was incredibly impressive.
Yeah, really a tale of two halves for this Manchester United side because they couldn't compete and they had trouble kind of finishing all of their chances against Everton in the first 45. But I mean, second half, holy cow, they just went on a run there, and ultimately Ella Toon gets a brace with three different goal scorers to get the win and 3 points.
Yeah, beautiful to see a team turn it around for the second half. We're going to go to a quick break, and we will have the NWSL recap and all of the highlights when we return.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
CBS Sunday, after the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after the Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
It was quite the action from NWSL this weekend. Why don't we get started on that Kansas City against Angel City match, because six goals, all vibes, okay? We are just doing zero defending, and we are just scoring goals here. My favorite thing right now is Bea Zanerato and Chiwenga, the way that they are combining for Kansas City. Something to continue to build off of, obviously, but just exciting. They're on the same wavelength.
They are. It's been really fun to watch those two. And this Kansas City side, with all of the goals that they're scoring, it's no wonder. Because when you look at who they have in their attack, they've all come together and played on the same page with Bea Zanerato, the Brazilian international, Chiwenga, Kristen Hamilton, Lola Bonta, Alexis Fanstra. But they... I don't think Kansas City has as much attack or as many scoring threats without Vanessa DiBernardo. And it's not just because of the goals that she scored, but DiBernardo's ability to connect in the midfield, to interchange up top with one of the forwards and find that space in behind. She just looks like she is in the best form that we've seen in probably the last 2 years from DiBernardo.
Absolutely. Because not only is she able to rotate positionally, she can shoot from distance. Her vision to play balls between the seams of the back line for their forwards is unmatched right now in the NWSL. I think when you have somebody like her that can connect the line so well and feed the forwards, which is something a lot of teams are struggling with, is connecting the midfield line to the front line and having chemistry, it's so great for Kansas City. It's scary to think of what she's going to do the rest of the season if she's starting out this hot and they're just going to keep building chemistry. But I think you're right. No, I don't think much of this happens without her being so informed and good on the ball for this team.
And she has a lot of freedom on the pitch to float where she needs to, whether that's going centrally and higher, but also in the first two goals that came for Kansas City in the first half against Angel City, it's DiBernardo being out wide all the way on the flank. So her freedom and flexibility to occupy those spaces helps the current.
That's such a beautiful shout, Lisa. She's obviously a huge part of that attack. But let's talk about Kansas City defensively. Obviously, we can say that they're doing so well offensively, but if they're unable to keep a clean sheet, if they're unable to defend, will they be found out soon?
I think they already have been found out. I mean, teams know where to expose them. The three back is a very risky position, positionally. There's a lot of exposure on the wings where teams mm-hmm. can cross balls in. You saw Sidluru was wide open in the middle of the pitch between two defenders. That should not happen at all. She needs to be challenged. But if they're going to keep scoring more goals, then they're conceding. More power to them. I mean, I don't know. I knowing Vladko Antonovsky, they're going to tighten that up. I don't know if they'll switch tactically or what's going to happen, but I assume that that's something that's going to be fixed. And he's not happy with conceding so many goals.
And the goals that Kansas City has conceded have mostly been run of play, right?
The transition.
They're transition moments, and that's where Kansas City is going to get hurt all year.
It's that three back. It's tough.
It's the three back. And when KC has the ball, they're so expansive because they want to take up so much of the pitch. But as opposition, if you win the ball back on Kansas City and you can make your first two passes progressive into the attacking end, you're in behind.
Yeah.
All you just got to do is put your shot on target and find the back of the net.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on to Portland Thorns and Racing Louisville because, you know, this is my girl, Sam Coffey. She comes in with the savior, but if you're talking Portland Thorns, how are you not better defensively? How are you getting two goals scored on you in the first 6 minutes by the same player? I mean, that's the part that really frustrated me.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it's frustrating. I think we do have to give credit to Kanu because I think she made something out of nothing here. Beating Kelly Hubley, slotting it home, even her header. She was still challenged between two defenders. She was sandwiched. But I do think Portland, they just look like they're caught between two minds. I don't know, you know, if they came out wanting to press. How are they going to score goals? There wasn't a clear mission as to how they were trying to get a win. I think in the second half, they took a note from Louisville, where Louisville came out high pressing and mm-hmm. put them under a lot of pressure. There were turnovers. They looked really frazzled with that. Portland came out in the second half and did that same thing.
Yeah.
And I think it worked to their advantage, and that's why they got the two goals, because I mean, it's a learning moment for Louisville. They're still a young team. Bev Yanez is a new head coach for Louisville. Game management is tough when you have a completely new squad and figuring out, especially at Providence Park and how freaking loud that stadium is, and everyone's cheering against you, how to maintain energy. I think it worked in Portland's favor, and Sam Coffey, I mean, what can you do to stop this? This is just a beautiful shot.
It's so well done. Portland had to know that Louisville is susceptible in second mm-hmm. halves because it's already happened this year. They had a two-goal lead first match day of the NWSL season, and they end up losing 3 points on the line, and they end up splitting points with Orlando. Throughout the first 45 minutes, Portland only had one shot on target. They weren't even
at the very end
creating anything. They weren't creating anything. There were changes from Mike Norris for the Thorns at halftime. Megan Klingenberg and Hina Sugita came in. That changed things.
Oh, yeah.
Sugita found herself on the ball a lot more. She wants the ball, and she wants to be able to dictate the tempo in the middle of the field. Klingenberg was able to whip crosses in, combine with the front line. That changed things, hands down, for Portland to be a very different team in the second half that had more of an attacking mindset to put Louisville under pressure.
I will say, I think Kling needed to start that match. I think that they were missing heart. They looked like everyone was kind of on an island in the first half, and I think Kling came in. She brought intensity. She was whipping balls in, right? She was going to big tackle. She was shooting. I think they needed that experience and leadership in the first half that they brought in the second, but they needed it sooner.
You mentioned that there, right? Putting her in, Klingenberg in earlier or starting her in this match, but this Portland Thorn squad is not something that we have seen typically for them to not, I mean, they have 1 point across three games. That's not something we've seen from Portland Thorns. Should we be worried about them? Or are you saying that they already have the tools within their own squad and they can figure this out quickly?
Yeah, I think they have the tools. It's super early in the season. They're just trying to build chemistry along with every other team. NWSL is crazy. Some teams that are hot right now are going to be cold in 2 weeks. You never know what's going to happen. So I think that they'd rather, you know, Sam Coffey in her post-match interview was brilliant. She said, you know, we'd rather take these losses now. We're going to learn from this. This is not who we are. But now we have this in our back pocket. If this happens again, we know how to climb our way out of it.
I think Sam Coffey post-game saying that she wasn't happy, that the team wasn't happy with 1 point across the day, even though they came from a two-goal deficit behind. Other teams might say, hey, we're really proud of how we responded in the second half. That wasn't good enough for Portland, which makes me believe that it speaks a lot of volumes about the maturity and the ability of this team to be able to turn things around, because they know where the bar is set and they know they're not there yet.
No questions about the maturity with Sam Coffey, right? After the U.S. Women's National Team lost to Mexico, I spoke to her, and the way that she was so mature in her answers and the way that she handled the loss, Ross. I love her as a future captain of the U.S. Women's National Team. That's my shout now after I kind of like was fighting for her to make the roster. Now I'm fighting for her to potentially be a captain one day. Let's move over to Bay FC against Houston Dash. That was a 2-3 game. This is the inaugural match for Bay FC. I think they had 18,000 people in attendance, a sold out home opener. We love to see it. And Rachel Kundanangi coming into this game, scoring a goal. Just absolutely incredible all around as a performance from Bay FC, but also Houston Dash, worthy of an experience. I mean, worthy of everything. Diana Ordóñez and Maria Sanchez combining for their goal, that Mexico powerhouse there. Love to see it. What's your take, Lisa?
Houston was rough in the first 45. I am going to be very honest. They're three back it's really hard to play three in the back. You need three center backs, and none of the three that Fran Alonso is playing in the back are center backs. So it's really tough. You're asking a lot of players that are out of position and going up against top talent that is so lethal in the front line when you look at Bay. They changed things in the second 45 minutes. They found different spaces. They were not tracking back as much. For so much of the first 45, Houston looked like they had 10 players behind the ball every single time. They needed to stretch, go a little bit higher up the pitch, and that would just open up some of the spaces. They weathered the storm in the first 45 and were able to come back and climb their way into this game at the very end.
Yeah. Poor Bay. I really wanted them to get a win at home. The stadium, the energy in it seemed amazing, but it's the game management piece again. I think these teams that are new or have coaches first times in the NWSL, you really have to teach your team how to manage games, and that comes in training of, how do we kill time? What are we looking to do at this certain minute? Here's when we're going to drop into a low block and just keep them in front of us. To Lisa's point, I think you're right, Houston in the first half. Why were Ordóñez and Sanchez so low on the pitch? Those are people that you need higher up. They're going to set up scoring opportunities. Soon as they did, and I wonder what that halftime speech was, because they came out with some fire behind them. Ordóñez was pressing. They were gritty. They were going to tackles really hard. I think they came out with a statement and wanted to prove that. And I don't think Bay had the correct response for it. I think that they were shocked that that's how Houston came out, because they were so poor in the first half. But credit to Houston for clawing their way back. But what an exciting last 20 minutes of a game.
Exactly. And Houston to do that on the road in front of a really loud crowd. Anytime Bay got on the ball or they were creating something, the entirety of PayPal Park was screaming and on their feet. That's a really tough thing to come back for when you're the opposition going into a away match and ultimately get 3 points.
Yeah, that's a massive,
and
massive.
And the first 3 points of the season.
Yeah. Good to see from Houston Dash. We've been waiting for them to kind of figure it out. They're getting closer. Mm-hmm. They're taking some steps under Fran Alonso. We're going to go to a quick break, and we will have Sandra Herrera joining us next with her power rankings of the weekend.
It only takes 2 minutes of sheer horror.
A new Paramount Plus original docuseries.
We were dealing with a serial killer preying on elderly women.
A cold-blooded killer hidden in plain sight.
He's suffocating people with pillows.
Leaving corpses all over Texas.
How did it happen?
I was responsible for her. The guilt is immeasurable.
They covered it up.
Pillowcase Murders, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back into Attacking Third, presented by CarMax, the way car buying should be. It's now time for Sandra Herrera's segment, where we talk about her power rankings, and this is a look at her top five. San Diego Wave, still number one for her. North Carolina Courage, Gotham FC, Kansas City Current at number four, and the Chicago Red Stars taking number five in her power rankings. Sandra Herrera, it is time to grill you on this. I know you're going to educate us and tell us that the power rankings don't have to do with just that week and just that result, but we're going to ask the questions anyway, you know, because that's what we do to annoy you.
You got to do what you got to do. I'm here. I'm here for every single one of my annoyed siblings. I love each and every one of you.
Beautiful. All right, Sandra, San Diego Wave is still number one. What has continued to impress you about them?
Relentlessness. You know, I hate to bring it down to one player, but sometimes you're a front office and you find yourself needing to make a move. And I just feel like Casey Stoney went ahead and got the player that could possibly have been that missing piece for San Diego. I think Savannah McCaskill is showing it week in and week out for them. And we can talk about the added stoppage time for some of these games as a trend across the league for the last 3 weeks. But the stoppage time amount was issued, they clearly made the most of it. I just love that the San Diego Wave side is, yes, led by some pretty big names in Alex Morgan and Naomi Girma. But when we're talking about this game winner for this game, Emily Van Egmond. So I just love that players are stepping up when they're asked to step up.
San Diego stays at the top of your power rankings, but the Kansas City Current, they have risen to the fourth spot in your power rankings, up two from last week. Sandra, but they're the only team that's won all three of their matches. Why isn't Kansas City higher?
I'm here for my Midwest Queens. I'm loving it. I'm loving what we're seeing out of Kansas City, but I'm not loving the goals that they're conceding week in and week out. There's something exciting about a team that's going to go out there and say, you know what, we're just going to go and score more goals than you. And of course, that's all good and fine and fun until maybe, just maybe, you find yourself on the opposite end of that. I really want to see this Current side go ahead and put out a 90-minute performance where they can pick up a clean sheet.
Sandra, speaking of teams that need a 90-minute performance and then some, let's go to Utah, because my home state, the Royals, so much hope for them, but it just seems like not much is aligning in their run of play and decisions, frankly, in my opinion. How can they move up? What do they need to do to really improve and get better for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I'm with you, Darren. I don't know. Maybe they need a little bit more, like, extra prayers from the hometown kid. Like, maybe you could help manifest some of this. It's still early enough days here to where I think we're still waiting for that week for Utah Royals to kind of show us who they are, who they are going to be. I think that is one of the storylines that is always going to remain around an expansion franchise that makes their entry into the league. What is the culture? What is this team going to be? And I'm not quite sure that we're just seeing it just yet. So I think that's what we need to see, not just from the players, but obviously it starts, I think, with the coaching staff and the tactics that they're presenting to the players. What are you asking these players to go out there and execute? So I think maybe they're getting a little bit of a streaky start, for these opening weeks. So I want to see a game plan, a definitive game plan from the Royals, and a complete 90 minutes, like you mentioned, Darian.
All right, something you mentioned there about the Utah Royals. I want to talk about Allie Setnor scoring two golazos the last 2 weeks. She's carrying this team on her back, but obviously, like we mentioned, there's not enough happening team-wise. These are two individual goals for Allie. How good has the number one draft pick been for you, Sandra?
Solid. I think that's the silver lining in all this, Jenny. I think that's what you look at. Maybe that's where the culture of the team identity is going to go. Maybe it's going to be give the ball to the young prospect and let her do cool things with it. But that's also a dangerous game to play, because this is someone new to the league, new to playing professionally, and you're going to want to, you know, have this player be able to develop and maybe not absorb so much pressure upon her shoulders to deliver week in and week out. So I think, yeah, that's a silver lining that you can have a young prolific player like that. But what's happening around them? I think really quickly in the NWSL season, the long grind that it is, those individual performances can only take you so long. Eventually, there's going to have to be some cohesion and collective play here.
Sandra, let's go east. North Carolina, Sean Nahas's North Carolina Courage team. For me, I love the way that they play. I think they're the most cohesive football style playing team right now in the NWSL. And actually, last year, I believe that too. What do they have to do to move to that number one spot? Because I think Sanchez is thriving under Nahas and looks so threatening. And I think we're just seeing her heat up into the season.
Yeah, zero disagreement from here, and from me, Darian, I'm with you on that as well. I think they can rival San Diego Wave to kind of take the top spot in the rankings. Ashley Sanchez, I think, is going to be key to that. I like that they're coming off of a week of kind of tinkering some things a little bit. Shauna has in the coaching staff giving Bianca St. George's a start there in this last week. So I like that they're not going to shy away from that. Again, they're preaching their system. We're seeing the continuity of that in 2024, that whoever you are going to swap in or swap out or make player rotations and adjustments, that as long as the system is in place, this is a team that is going to find success on the field. So I think if they can go out there and maybe get perhaps a more dominant win. I think that's something that they're looking for as well. They had a really exciting start to the season, putting up so many goals against Houston Dash. And since then, it's been a little bit more methodical and some chess movement as well, which is, there's no problem with that. That's part of soccer. But I think some folks know that this Courage side is capable of putting up those type of score lines, and they want to see them again, including myself. So if they can maybe get a couple more, maybe they'll topple San Diego for the top of the power rankings.
Sandra, the Chicago Red Stars were tough last year. They finished the bottom of the season, and now they look like a brand new team. Mallory Swanson salvages a point for the Red Stars against Orlando this weekend. How good has Swanson looked for this Red Stars team?
It's something to be said about being back, right? And I would argue that Mal Swanson has kind of shown that she's been back even without being on that score sheet in those earlier weeks of the season. But now that she's got one under her belt going into week four, I think folks are going to say, uh-oh, she's back for real. And I think there's something to be said about the Chicago Red Stars side, that they got these victories without Mallory Swanson getting on the score sheet in terms of an assist or in terms of a goal. But you could see in some of those prior goals how she was involved in some of those playmaking sequences. But having a team going into that match against Orlando Pride, where there were already six different players kind of contributing to the goal contributions, and now you're adding Mallory Swanson into the mix, I think it's a complete smashing of last year's narrative around the Chicago Red Stars teams in terms of who was going to provide in front of goal and in front of net. And it turns out it could literally be anybody now.
I love that, Sandra. Speaking of who's providing in front of goal, Spirit jumped two positions from last week to this week, and I thought it was really fun to watch them play. Corey Bethune glides on the ball. I love to see it. And her combination between Trinity Rodman and Ule Sarr, I think, is really threatening. How do they keep improving? Because I really like the dynamic three and loving seeing them improve each week.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm here for the youth, right? Like, I believe the children are the future, and that's the vibe for Washington Spirit for sure. I would like to see some more of that. Go ahead. I like that they're being tasked with this responsibility. I think maybe sometimes for head coaches, there's a bit of that, you know, narrative or hesitation to maybe give too much too quickly to younger players or first-year players, but I like that they're giving it to Hal Herseth and then also Croy Bethune as well, making an impact on the pitch, and they're kind of really rising to the occasion. They don't look intimidated by the moment, and maybe a little bit of that has to do with some of these early games, being at home, being at Audi Field. I think that's something else for us to keep an eye on as well. Is Audi Field about to become this type of fortress for the Spirit? You love to see it.
We love the fortresses on home field. Sandra, thank you so much. We love you joining us at all times. We're going to see you a little bit later in the show, so we won't say goodbye to you yet, but we're going to go to a quick break, and we will have more Sandra a little bit later.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
Last week, the U.S. Women's National Team midfielder Corbin Albert's social media activity was at the center of controversy as she had posted expressed anti-LGBTQ views. Megan Rapinoe, who has long championed LGBTQ plus inclusion, responded to Corbin Albert's social media activity with a post of her own stating, "For people who want to hide behind, quote, my beliefs, I would just ask one question. Are you making any type of space safer, more inclusive, more whole, any semblance of better, bringing the best out of anyone? Because if you aren't, all you believe is in hate. And kids are literally killing themselves because of this hate." Albert then issued a statement in response to the backlash. In an Instagram story, Albert wrote, "I want to sincerely apologize for my actions on social media. Liking and sharing posts that are offensive, insensitive, and aren't hurtful are immature and disrespectful, which was never my intent. I'm really disappointed in myself, and I'm deeply sorry for the hurt that I have caused to my teammates, other players, fans, friends, and anyone who was offended. I truly believe that everyone should feel safe and respected everywhere and on all playing fields. I know my actions have not lived up to that, and for that I sincerely apologize. It's an honor and a privilege to get to play the sport on the world stage, and I promise to do better." Both of those statements, Darian, I just want to get your initial thoughts on the controversy.
You play the world sport. What were you thinking? All eyes are on you. Mind you, you're wearing number 15. Megan Rapinoe has paved the way for all of us to enjoy the sport globally. She is one of the most impactful athletes in the world. To wish her harm, to like and repost these things with all eyes on you, you're on the women's national team. What are you thinking? I think the apology was bleh. I think she should know better. I think she's old enough. It's wildly disrespectful. I think you're making this an unsafe space, reiterating this hate. Believe what you want to believe, but all eyes are on you. You are on the world stage. You play the world sport. I don't know what she was thinking. I completely disagree with what she did. These reposts and whatnot, it's a little wild to me. I think we all know better at this point. I hope she takes a really hard look at herself, especially wishing harm on another teammate. It's crazy.
I think it's a good point that she's old enough, right? Like, she grew up in social media in the time of everything digital is permanent forever.
And watched. All eyes are on you.
And you are being watched as a professional athlete. This is disrespectful. No one is ever going to believe and have the same beliefs as everyone else, but in a place of work, which to her is the spotlight to some extent because of being a professional athlete and on the national team, to be so outwardly hateful doesn't help anyone. It's a lack of respect, especially knowing how much work the U.S. Women's National Team has done on inclusivity and kind of equality across the board. That's where there's a disconnect. And she, think about it as a place of work. Albert has to go to work with these people. You don't have to agree with them, but you have to respect them. And that's where the disconnect is.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the inclusive aspect and the accepting aspect of women's soccer is something that we champion, right? That we love about it. So the fact that this has become such a talking point and a point of controversy is tough. I just want to talk about, you know, reporting into camp and how, like, we move this forward, right? She has to come into the U.S. Women's National Team camp. She was announced to the She Believes roster. Many of her teammates were teammates with Megan Rapinoe, and Megan Rapinoe has obviously, you know, said that she is disgusted by this. What is it about, you know, going in with your team after sharing views like this, feeling this backlash? What does she have to do to kind of make things right, right? Because there are teammates that are gay. You know, and expressing views that are maybe against that, maybe hurtful, is that something that she has to make okay or you know, like, kind of talk about? Or do you think that not even address?
I'm sure they're going to have conversations. I think this is a very outspoken women's national team, which I love. They champion inclusivity. They champion rights for everybody, as they should. And for her to go into the space where these athletes have always done this, have always championed these things, and disrespect it is very harmful. So she has a lot of work to do, I think, a lot of growth to do. She has to have tough conversations, I imagine, going into this camp, because we're all adults, and it's a very serious workplace. I doubt that it's just gonna be swept under the rug, especially with the spotlight on them. And I hope that they have those tough conversations and she's able to grow and just be much more respectful and accepting. You don't have to agree on things. That's totally fine. No one's asking you to do that, but at least give space for people to be whoever they are, however they are.
Yeah.
And I hope she learns that going into this camp.
Beautifully, beautifully said, Darian. I want to bring Sandra Herrera into this conversation as well. A very important conversation as you report on the U.S. Women's National Team. One of the bigger things is Lynn Williams and Abby Dahlkemper have both shared the post that Just Women Sports put out about Megan Rapinoe's statement. How does that kind of change the dynamic within that locker room, Sandra?
I think it absolutely changes it. I think Corbin Albert, I don't think anyone's here to discuss whether or not she is a soccer player with good soccer skills. I don't think that's what's, you know, up for discussion here. But this is a young player who is finding herself breaking into this national team program. And with that comes a lot of spotlight and maybe reintroduction to how the program works. And we're talking about how this is a national team program that champions a lot of inclusivity, a lot of different type of socioeconomic issues across the program. And this is beyond decades. This isn't like this just happened with Megan Rapinoe. This has always been the United States women's national team. They have constantly utilized this platform to champion all of these things. So I'm with you, my colleagues, in that this is not new, that she is old enough, that you should be able to read the room at this point when there are literal decades of history for what this national team represents. So it's deeply disappointing, and I also would say that it's deeply heartbreaking as well, because you have not only teammates that you are likely hurting and offending with some of these social media posts, but there's also a massive fan base that have found themselves invested in this team because it has become a place where they feel included, where they feel like they matter. And that is also what is deeply heartbreaking as well for me in this case. And I think when you see other teammates kind of co-signing essentially off of Megan Rapinoe's statement, I think that tells us all that we need to know. We have to accept that at face value. And sometimes when something like this happens, it creates so much new different type of headlines and news cycles that it almost becomes like a buzz, like, but not in a good way, in a way where it's like we're all in the cafeteria and everyone's just speaking very loudly to each other at their own table, and then no one's actually listening to the other table alongside them. It's just loud noise, and the messaging maybe gets lost a little bit. And I think that's where you have to simplify things. The fact of the matter is yes, this is a player that reposted or reshared or liked and or co-signed herself with very anti-LGBTQ plus issues. But among that, you're out here liking a social media post that is celebrating harm to a teammate. I think that is where the line is absolutely crossed. There is conversations that you maybe are hopeful that will be had with this player amongst her teammates around causes and champion causes like making it a safe space for LGBTQ communities. But how do you have that conversation with the teammate that they went out there and actively liked a post that ultimately wished ill will towards another teammate? I think that is going to be the most difficult conversation.
Sandra, thank you for speaking on this. I think, like, we've all kind of had conversations around it, just kind of trying to understand how you could ever wish ill will on a teammate or on a player or on a person ever, right? Like, just the hatefulness of doing so is pretty tricky for us to understand. But yes, I think that women's soccer has been such an inclusive and accepting community, so to kind of, I don't know, make any comments against that is hurtful. But thank you for joining us, as always, Sandra. We love your viewpoint, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks.
All right, ladies, I just want to conclude this conversation with, you know, kind of making sure that we're aware that everyone is allowed to have their own viewpoints. I think that what we're kind of agreeing on is that with the spotlight that she has, pushing any sort of hurtful, harmful agenda is what we disagree with. Is that where I'm, am I wording that correctly, Darian?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I think you just have to be very conscious of the environment you're in and what you're sharing and reposting. Is that really helpful? Did that do anything for you to do that? And then the biggest thing for me is wishing harm on a teammate whose number you're representing that is has paved the way for people to play this beautiful sport and given you the platform to play this beautiful sport. So I think she just has a big learning lesson, and I hope that she gets caught up in it from this camp.
Yeah. I hope that there are conversations and that there is growth. Thank you guys so much for joining us on Attacking Third, presented by CarMax, the way car buying should be. We're going to be back in studio on Thursday, and Sandra and Lisa will be on YouTube on Wednesday. So be sure to tune in to all of that action. See you next time.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.